I think there's an understanding now that a lot of materials with value go into buildings, and we should be rethinking those things. At the end of its useful life, when it's done being used for whatever it was built for, can we turn it into a new space with a new use and keep that material value? Or can we use that material value and sell it or donate it or reuse it or repurpose it? I think that's what we're moving toward.
There is a circular economy emerging in real estate, but why does the U.S. lag behind the Netherlands and other countries in its transition from take, make, waste to reduce, reuse, recycle, and recover? I'm Therese Fitzgerald, Executive Editor of Commercial Property Executive. Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. For this episode, I spoke to professionals who are leading the shift from linear to circular. I asked them about their visions and what it will take to make their visions a reality. Let's get started. According to the UK-based Ellen MacArthur Foundation, a circular economy is one in which waste and pollution are eliminated. Materials and buildings are designed to be kept in use at their highest value, and natural resources are regenerated or reused rather than depleted. Those may sound like high ideals, but the wheels are in motion in the private sector and in a number of local and state governments. In terms of carbon emissions, waste falls under Scope 3 emissions, those that result from the indirect emissions in a company's value chain. To date, many property owners have largely been focused on Scope 1, direct emissions from owned sources, and Scope 2, indirect emissions from energy sources they purchase and consume. Many are just beginning to tackle Scope 3 emissions.
I would say it's in the early stages, especially in the United States. Folks are just understanding what the circular economy is. They're just understanding how to measure it and manage it. And honestly, they're just starting to realize its importance.
That's Marta Schantz, Senior Vice President of ULI Greenprint, the organization of 46 companies that have banded together to be leaders of sustainability on the 12,000 properties they collectively own around the world.
It's certainly not at scale yet. Some companies are starting to pilot different projects around the circular economy at different buildings. Others are starting to set corporate-wide policies around the circular economy for their portfolios. But it's certainly not ubiquitous across the market yet.
For real estate companies, circularity involves two types of waste: operational waste and construction and demolition waste. Currently, ULI Greenprint tracks its members' operational waste, the regular trash that goes into landfills or is diverted from landfills. According to the Greenprint Performance Report on Improvements from 2019 to 2020, the members reduced their landfill waste by 11.7% compared to the prior year, while waste diversion fell 6.6%.
I mean, COVID does make things weird, so we didn't normalize for COVID, but I mean, 11% reduction of landfill waste is pretty remarkable. I would say that's fantastic. Additionally, it wasn't just COVID vacancies that contributed to that. Over 1,000 waste-related projects were implemented by Greenprint members in 2020. And so that can range from recycling programs to waste management to composting, to the softer side of things like waste monitoring and waste audits and tenant engagement efforts.
As for reducing construction and demolition waste, which according to the EPA is double the amount of regular trash generated in the United States, Greenprint members are talking about it and piloting circular construction concepts like using mass timber and salvaging and repurposing steel, Schantz said. Certainly, ground-up developers have a greater opportunity to participate in the circular economy because they consume more building materials, and they have more control over their building's upfront carbon. But companies that just own and occupy existing real estate also have a role to play, though they may not realize it until they do a complete carbon inventory.
When it comes to tenant fit-out improvements and all of the materials and the waste that comes into play there, that's also something that companies in the real estate space can work to reduce. So it is very much a challenge, not only because folks haven't quite figured out how to define or measure or reduce it, but also because folks don't necessarily know how to quantify that business case yet.
That business case, that there is a value in being circular and not just a responsibility, is intrinsic to the circular economy and critical if it is to be embraced, especially in the United States, experts say. So how does this cradle-to-cradle concept create value? When existing materials and structures are employed, material costs are lower and construction timelines are shorter, and companies can derive additional income streams from their waste. Further, communities are more likely to get behind circular projects, and corporations, which are rapidly raising the bar for lower carbon emissions and reduced environmental impact overall, are more likely to lease space in those buildings.
We think that there's going to be a higher level of expectation as to what kinds of properties and what kinds of developments, you know, more innovative and progressive occupiers will be seeking.
That's Gary McCunis. He leads the Work Studio Group at the Cunningham Architecture Firm. The group's clients are corporate occupiers and developers catering to corporate needs.
We've seen the value of LEED certified buildings maybe generating a higher return on investment, but we're also seeing that there's a greater awareness of the value of circular projects.
Cunningham has been studying how to include circular economy and regenerative design principles into their projects for the past few years. What's regenerative design? While sustainable design focuses on minimizing environmental and social impacts, regenerative design focuses on creating positive social and environmental impacts.
You're familiar with, you know, what has been referred to as sustainable design, especially about LEED and all that. And now, you know, the AIA and other firms are recognizing regenerative design as the next leap forward with that. We're kind of trying to go to the next frontier, which is bringing these circular economy business models and principles, which go beyond certainly architectural design and really gets into core operations of clients and whatever the services and products they make. So, you know, this is a much broader initiative.
In the circular economy, buildings are seen as material banks with exterior and interior components that can be sold off, reused, or donated when they are no longer needed. Chris Wheeler is a designer in Cunningham's workplace studio and a regenerative design advisor on the firm's design and performance team.
I think there's an understanding now that a lot of materials with value go into buildings, and we should be rethinking those things. At the end of its useful life, when it's done being used for whatever it was built for, can we turn it into a new space with a new use and keep that material value? Or can we use that material value and sell it or donate it or reuse it or repurpose it? I think that's what we're moving towards.
Also, in the circular economy, buildings are designed to be flexible and are demountable. Megan Nowak is also a Cunningham workplace studio designer and regenerative design advisor.
I think 2020 is a good example of real estate portfolios being questioned. You know, what am I going to do with this empty office building? Or no one can afford this apartment. Making value of what you already have is a lot easier if your building is more agile. So the circular economy kind of boasts this multi-purpose building, something that can easily demount if it needs to grow, or if it's modular, it can shrink if you need less, and then you can sell off those pieces. And so your money and your portfolio are just more agile in general.
By the way, LEED and circular strategies are not mutually exclusive. LEED 4.1 does have credits for minimizing and optimizing the use of buildings, building products, and materials, and for reducing operational and construction waste. To raise awareness about the circular economy, Cunningham is developing an interactive tool that encompasses 30 circular economy strategies and business models to be applied throughout a building's life cycle. The tool, which the firm hopes will eventually be an open source application, is being used preemptively to get entire project teams, designers, property owners, building operators, manufacturers, contractors, and others, to begin by thinking about the end. And some of the strategies are being applied in Cunningham projects. The tool's strategies include using reclaimed materials that meet all aesthetic and performance requirements, using digital fabrication to minimize construction and operational waste, using lighting or flooring as a service rather than purchasing it, and placing passports on materials. Here's McCunis again.
By doing that one project at a time and project team by project team, we're exposing these strategies and applying them. But we're also trying to prepare these teams, not only our internal teams, but broader members of our project team that include outside players, trying to prepare them for what we anticipate coming at us from outside of our industry.
What's coming, he explains, is higher levels of professional responsibility for the pollution and health and wellness factors created by buildings, not only in their commissioning and their operation, but also at the end of their life. Cunningham project teams that work internationally already encounter increasingly stringent regulations regarding resource consumption and waste reduction, as well as growing demand for circularity from end users. In 2020, for example, the European Commission adopted a Circular Economy Action Plan as part of the European Green Deal. It contains legislative and non-legislative measures to help the EU reach carbon neutrality by 2050 and to stop biodiversity loss. But even prior to the plan, many EU countries were on the path to being circular due to regulation and private sector adoption. In 2016, the Dutch government pledged to make the Netherlands 50% waste-free by 2030 and 100% circular by 2050. In the United States, a number of forward-thinking cities and a handful of states are also starting to take action with rules and incentive programs. One of those cities is San Francisco, where the Department of the Environment recently won a grant from the Carbon Neutral Cities Alliance to create the Building Reuse Innovation Center. The BRIC will help fill in what is thought of as the last mile in material take-back programs for smaller TI projects, which typically do not meet the minimum load requirement.
They are really thinking about ways.
Francis Yang is a sustainability specialist in the San Francisco office of AREUP and the materials leader for the Americas.
They're already known for really high diversion rates in real estate and construction, but they're thinking much more holistically about it now and using the circular economy principles of, you know, the whole supply chain and upstream waste, not just what you deal with downstream, but where does it come from and waste generation and how to create incentives and policies and programs to address the problem much further upstream.
Government action will definitely help stimulate both the supply and the demand side of the circular economy. But because the U.S. is so large and varied, and because there are so many stakeholders involved, wholesale change will need to be market-driven rather than regulation-based, Yang said.
That's why, you know, like things like LEED were effective because it became a market decision, not a regulatory decision. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the federal government did really help with the GSA making LEED a requirement. I feel like we're seeing that with circular economy as well, that the local governments are stepping up and they're saying, well, we know that this is good sense and we have problems. We see them coming and we see how circular economy can really bring some solutions. And it's, I think it's exciting too, that the people who can make the change, wanting the change themselves, it's going to be much more effective than people just reacting to required changes.
AREUP has been engaged with the circular economy for 5 years, both in its engineering practice and as a global knowledge partner of the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. The firm has also developed a number of free tools for industry professionals. Here's Tom Kennedy, an AREUP principal and the leader of the firm's circularity initiatives.
The reason I got involved with it a number of years ago is because of the thought that we're leaving money on the table. that there's a different way of thinking about things. And it's not just a feel-good factor. Altruism is great, but especially the US needs to see that there is a bottom line impact beyond what we might see on a corporate sustainability statement or something like that, that there is a value to it. And I think that's a great driver to say, okay, well, what is that? How do we quantify that?
According to Kennedy and Yang, governments and private entities are starting to see the economics of the circular economy and to see waste as a resource.
A lot of entities, I think, are realizing that they need to act because it's good business sense, not just good for the planet.
Yang is also a co-founder of All for Reuse, a volunteer group of 6 buildings industry professionals, asking developers and large users to commit to prioritizing reuse and salvage for commercial tenant improvements. Still, for many firms, quantifying the value of circularity is still difficult. And frankly, change is hard.
Change is uncomfortable. People are uncomfortable with change. They like a formula that works for them and they just rinse and repeat. So if you mess with that formula and say, well, there's a different way to think about it and maybe we have to shift and maybe we don't make quite as much profit in year one, but it's an investment in the future. That's a tough conversation to have. And it's conversations that we need to have to say, we need to invest in our future by thinking differently, changing how we do it, what good looks like for us, and looking at what are the impacts that will compound year on year if we make those decisions now.
While converting to circular processes and products takes courage, it also takes technology. Here's Yang.
The shift that we have to make involves good documentation, good information management. And that's where I think, you know, we could have a really great role to play because we're already creating a lot of documentation for our buildings and how they get built. And so now let's expand that. And especially with everything going digital, it should be easier. You know, we're getting technology is incredible with what we can do in storing information and organizing it and managing it. So we're also seeing a lot of enterprises rise up and tools come forth. And we have also partnered to try to build out some of these things.
In particular, the material passports that I mentioned previously will be critical. Just as a passport helps people move from one place to another, this type of passport would allow individual building products to continue their journey through a QR code or a radio frequency identification tag that would reveal a product's material contents, its age, and previous uses. Also, Kennedy said, there's not a lot of recognition in code for the reuse of materials yet either.
There's a piece there that has to be understood. Things like the warranties and UL laboratories passing from second use materials, right. I don't think we're there yet.
And finally, for buildings and building processes to be truly circular, it will take a lot of follow through. Here's Nowak again.
You know, we can all boast this and design something demountable or choose that specified product that has a plan. But if the person at the other end of that building's life doesn't know about it or wasn't considered or incorporated at the onset of the project, it really doesn't matter. You know, then that circular strategy is no longer circular.
CPE will continue to bring you news and feature stories about circular strategies and circular innovators. If you have feedback on this episode or suggestions for future episodes, feel free to contact me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. Thanks for listening, and I will meet you next time on Sustainability Street. Bye for now.